Today is May 9th, 2018, and this is episode number 461 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin. Let's see here. What am I today? I'm a hootenanny and a half away from a really good time.
That's getting close.
To get the full story on anything we cover in this very podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the shoot us a note. At facebook.com/groups/context machine, where there's been a lot of activity, a lot of discussion. We really, really appreciate that. We're happy to have everybody over there.
Yes. Yes, we are. Really? Hootenanny and a half?
Away from a really good time.
Yeah. Might be more.
No, it's a hootenanny and a half.
Okay.
Yeah. Once I achieve a full hootenanny, as well as an additional half hootenanny, then I'll have a real good time.
You know, it's great to have life goals.
It is great to have life goals. Now, speaking of life goals, did you see on the Instagrams my new wax seal?
Oh my stamp! God, that thing is so cool.
Listen, thank you. It is. It's super cool. The photographs don't do it justice. The mirror-like finish on the flat portions are just—I don't even know how they polish it that much. Just don't even know.
I mean, it looks so cool, and when you told me that the photos just really don't show how awesome it is, I mean, that's saying something because it looks really awesome.
Yeah, it does. Thank you very much. I'm super, super excited about it. Haven't actually used it yet. I just have not had time to even do a test stamp, let alone write a proper letter with my writing slope and my and my name. I'm such a weirdo, man. I'm such a weirdo. I love the stamp.
Dearest Matilda. After overcoming dysentery and losing three left tenets, I found my new portable, what's it called?
Writing slope.
Writing slope.
Actually, that would be a campaign desk in that particular setting.
Scratch that. Reginald, take this down. My new campaign desk. Missing you. All the best. Mortimer.
Mortimer, that's my lad, is a good name, that's for sure. Anyway, yeah, got a new stamp. It's from Stamptitude. It's a different company. Most of my other stamps have come from Back to Zero, a company I love, Jack's Classics, Jack's Wax Classics, I think. I've got a couple of their stamps. This one is my first one from Stamptitude, relatively new company, but it's the best Art Deco design I've seen anywhere.
It totally rocks the Art Deco. I mean, seriously, I love it.
It is pretty Art Deco. No, it's huge. It's an inch and a quarter. And I was worried about that being a little bit too big, to be honest. But the details in the stamp, I felt warranted the exercise. And it turns out again, I haven't actually used it yet, but it looks like it's going to be the perfect size.
That's awesome.
Super excited about this. I'll post include a link to my Instagram post if you're interested in seeing my wax stamp seal. And you can see it for yourself. Put that awesome in the show notes.
Awesome. Yes.
Right. So plugs aside.
Mm-hmm.
Plugs aside, what do we have today? We actually have some fun topics today. We're going to talk about what Apple's share buybacks should be telling you about the future.
Sort of like green tea leaves, but with dollar bills.
Yeah, more like $100 bills, or actually more like $1 billion bills. But yeah. Then we're going to talk about privacy and Facebook and Mark Zuckerberg and the WhatsApp guy leaving and privacy and Tim Cook's calling privacy what do you call it, a human right?
Yes, he called it a human right.
And then the Center for Humane Technology, we've talked about them before. That's going to be a fun discussion.
That should be a really fun discussion.
And then we're going to talk about Google Duplex. It's a new house they're building.
I know. Brain's going to be in the left side. I'm going to be in the right side.
Oh my God, it's going to be so awesome.
We're going to be able to make a little on the wall, the dividing wall, and send each other secret messages.
We'll make a little door, a little cubbyhole door.
Oh my God, that'll be so cool.
Like a dumbwaiter door. We can crawl through and
that's going to be great.
Don't say anything else.
No, we don't want to ruin the surprise for the listeners.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, we're going to talk about Google Duplex too. we have listeners. That's so funny. So let's start with share buybacks, Apple share buybacks.
All right.
This is a topic I'm going to write about for Thursday. We're recording this on Wednesday. And I've been working on it in my head, but haven't actually started putting pen to paper. So really, this is just like doing my work out of it.
Canon right now.
Exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
So, all right, here's the deal. Apple just announced, we talked about the mechanics of this. Apple just announced the $100 billion stock buyback plan. And they had this $225 billion plan that they've already executed, $210 billion of. And they've really accelerated that. They bought back $23 billion in their own shares in just one quarter. That would be the March quarter, the just end of March quarter. And they're probably on pace to do the same thing again. And I don't have the quote, and I didn't bother pulling it up because this is, in fact, ACM.
Right.
But Tim and or Luca, and again, don't know which because this is ACM, said very specifically they intend to be aggressive. They intend to be fast, I think is what he said. It's going to be a fast buyback executing this $100 billion.
So, okay. All right. So that means a lot of stock buyback really fast.
Right. Like, by really fast over the next, realistically, six to 12 months, probably 9 to 12 months and probably 12 months.
That's still really fast. To spend that much money on stock buyback. Yeah, it is.
And actually, I really should say in the next 15 months because, after all, this $23 billion they just did was in one quarter, and that was, staggering. So it would require, obviously, in a $25 billion per quarter to do it over 12 months. So it's probably going to be more like 15 months. And in that 15 months, they will have announced another stock buyback plan, I bet.
So really, that means they're spending over $1 billion a month to buy back stock.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Which isn't a lot of money for Apple, but is a lot of money to, the rest of us.
Yeah.
But here's the thing.
There are companies that would love to make $1 billion over the course of their entire existence, and Apple's dropping that on stock buybacks every month.
Right. And this is in addition to the money that they're keeping around. Their goal is to be cash neutral, I think, by 2020, meaning that for all the cash they've got coming in, the same amount of cash will be going back out, and they'll maintain roughly the same levels of cash that they have at that point. Probably $250, $300 billion, something like that.
Okay, so when that happens, that's a sign of a very healthy company, not a company that's stagnated, right?
Well, it depends on who you ask. Some people say that Apple has way too much money and should be buying new markets, but that's just not the way Apple works. And if Apple started doing that, as a matter of fact, if Apple started doing that in a way that wasn't extraordinarily strategic, I think that would be the time to actually start worrying about Apple. But, that is that's beauty in the eye of the beholder there.
Sure.
So, full disclosure, I'm going to be talking about this at Silicon Valley Mac User Group. You're insulting.
That's not full disclosure. That's self-promotion.
Well,
so start this that is a dry. Hey, by the way, this I'm is going to be this, talking about this. Yeah. Okay.
A full disclosure, because this that also makes this a dry run for that. In addition to the dry run for my piece that I haven't written.
Yeah. All right. Full disclosure. Every time Brian and I record, it's a dry run for the show we think we'll do.
All right. Fair enough.
We just record it.
And we just record it. Yeah. That's about right. So anyway, here's the thing. Here's what this should be telling you about Apple. Now, and this sort of clicked with me when I was watching Warren Buffett talk mm-hmm. about how he told Steve, if you think your company is undervalued, buy, you know, use your money to buy shares back. That was his advice when Steve Jobs was still alive. He said that was the one conversation that he had with Steve Jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Today, of course, Berkshire Hathaway, which is Warren Buffett's company, owns $43 billion worth of Apple stock.
Wow. That's a lot of stock.
It's a lot of stock. They added 75 million shares. Does that sound right? Or 9 million shares. Maybe they have 75 million shares now. Anyway, they added a lot, like $9 billion in maybe again in the March quarter. So, I mean, you know, they clearly believe in Apple, and they clearly believe that Apple is undervalued. And what hit me is Apple saying that they're going to be aggressive with this $100 billion stock buyback and having turned aggressive with the accelerating the they're going to finish the previous stock buyback authorization 9 months early. Does that sound right? Or 6 months early? One of the two.
Yes, I remember it was early. I just don't remember
the
how.
Previous one is going to is probably finished up now because we're halfway through the June quarter. Almost halfway through, not quite halfway through the June quarter. So the previous program is probably finished as we speak, as we speak right here and record this. And they've started this new $100 billion one. And they accelerated the previous one. They're saying they're going to be aggressive with this next one. That says one thing to me. They're going to release something that will make the company more valuable.
All right. So that would mean they're buying back all this stock now before it shoots up in value.
Correct.
Which is kind of funny to say because it's already pretty valuable.
So it's not just, well, it is pretty valuable, but it has a relatively low PE. And the thing, and here's the thing about that low PE. So like, I don't know, let's
what's a PE we'll look, for, I'm price, playing every man here.
Of course you are. Price to earnings ratio. That means the value of the company compared to the profit the company earns. And it's every company has a valuation that is actually based on the future, not the past.
Okay.
And this is something that a lot of Apple investors in particular, because there are so many fans of Apple who are interested in owning this company because, you know, because it's a great company. They like the company, they like the products. And of course now, because Apple makes a crap ton of money. And, but a lot of people don't understand that about the stock market. The value of a company is predicated not on what it did, but on what it's expected to do. Which is why Wall Street estimates, analyst estimates, matter. It's those estimates that determine, well, it's actually what the money that the investors are willing to spend that determine the value. But what they're looking at is what a company is going to be doing in the next 3 months, the next 12 months, the next 5 years at best, right? But it's always about the future, always about the future, always about the future, which is why taking a look at Amazon, for instance. Amazon has a price to earnings ratio of 251. It used to be 450, by the way. It's way down. Yeah, actually, it used to be 1360. I remember that. That was a few years ago. Because everybody knows Amazon doesn't make any money today, although it actually is increasingly making money, to be honest. Something I thought would never, ever happen, to be honest. Right? They're starting to make money, which is why their PE is coming down.
So their whole thing about sell everything at a loss but make it up in volume actually worked.
It is working because they're entering markets where that's not what they're doing.
Right. Well, and they also have all the services they provide.
That, right.
Yeah, like AWS. Yeah.
Right. And you know, jacking up the price of Amazon Prime.
Oh, right. Yeah. My next renewal is going to cost me $119.
Yep. Instead of $79, right?
$99. Yeah. They raised it a couple years ago to $99, and now they're raising it again to $119.
Right. And so Amazon has a price to earnings ratio of 250 because people believe that Amazon will make even more money in the future, or make a lot more money in the future. Mm-hmm. Right. When people look at Apple, they don't see the next big thing because Apple doesn't talk about the next big thing. Right. So they don't, people don't have a faith like belief that Apple is going to make even more money because they're already making so much money. How could they possibly keep making more money? Because clearly the company can't innovate anymore. That's what many people think.
That's true. There's a lot of people that think Apple isn't innovating. And I still run into people all the time that think Apple is one quarter away from complete collapse.
Just all the time. Which is really ridiculous. Looking at IBM, PE of 11.9. Why? Because no one thinks that IBM is going to suddenly start making a lot more money. Let's look at HPQ. That would be Hewlett Packard. A PE of 13.48. I can't believe it's that high, to be honest. Intel, that would be Int C. PE of 15.5. Okay, and then Apple's is, if I remember correctly, Apple's is over 16 now, which is an increase. 17.14 Apple's PE is now. Mm-hmm. Now, that's up from like 12 from, I don't know, last year or something.
Oh, so maybe Apple is turning this boat around and they have a chance of success.
Maybe, but they've also been buying shares back. And one of the products of buying a share back is that as you pull shares off the market, you drive up the price of the remaining shares. That's like math 101. Mm-hmm. So for Apple to be this aggressive with its money, with its share buybacks, it believes the company is undervalued. For Apple to have just accelerated all these plans, it made sense really for Apple to jack up these buybacks in the March quarter because most of the March quarter, the stock languished over that weird meme that we've talked about where everyone was saying that the iPhone X was a failure despite all evidence to the contrary. Mm-hmm. still don't get that. It's still really, really weird to me. And so it made a lot of sense for Apple to really jack up those share buybacks. But now Apple is telling us, we're going to continue to do that. And there's only one reason in my mind for Apple to do that. And that reason is that there's something is going to be happening in the next 12 months, 24 months, 36 months that is going to mean even more money coming into Apple, that Apple is going to see some kind of growth. And in my mind, that is not the evolutionary growth of services and the App Store and subscriptions. It's not that.
So this is about going into a new market, you think?
I think so. Yeah. I think so. In the next 2 to 3 years.
All right. So do you have any speculation on what this new market might be?
Well, so first of all, I own a very tiny handful of Apple shares.
That's the disclosure right there.
That's another disclosure, yeah.
Yeah. I should give a disclosure. I know a guy who has a completely minuscule share in Apple.
Yeah. And I will add that doesn't affect what I will say about Apple. As a matter of fact, we're going to criticize Apple later in this very same show. So I own Apple because I believe in its long-term future. Yeah, spoiler. So do you know where I'm talking about?
I have.
We didn't talk. Okay. All right. We didn't talk about it or anything. So, point is that that's my disclosure. I don't know if this is going to be the car or something in medical or probably. You know what? I bet it is. I bet it's going to be the non-invasive glucose monitoring. That seems to me to be the closest to to release.
If they can do that where it's like a true medical grade device.
Yep.
Holy crap. That would be huge.
It will be huge. And it could also be that and other medical data related services.
I think you just hit on a big part of it. Medical data.
That to me seems to be the thing that Apple is closest to breaking out. Could be something AI related, but we're going to talk about that too. Could be something AI related, but I'm not seeing the evidence of that. But
certainly not yet.
Not yet. So, but I think that Apple is going, I think that this is the strongest signal that that so-called pipeline that my buddy John Keat likes to go frothing at the mouth about is that that's what they're talking about. That something that has been referenced in those kinds of statements is why Apple is doing these share buybacks now. And that they believe it's going to ratchet the company's value higher.
All right. So that sounds like a good investment on Apple's part.
Probably. I think if Apple is undervalued, I mean, I want to hammer on this particular thing, this whole thing about Apple's PE. If you believe that Apple's days of innovation are behind it, Apple's PE is high. 17 is a high price-earnings ratio. If you believe that Apple's days of innovation are behind it, if you believe that that Apple basically is going to be in a steady state thing where they dribble out new iPhone features, maybe ratchet up the average selling price a little bit, bring in a few billion dollars more in services and Macs are, just kind of this has been thing. I mean, the PE of 17 is high. If you believe that Apple is going to do something new and innovative, perhaps even extraordinary, that PE is ridiculous. And I think that most of Wall Street looks at Apple and they don't have they don't have the knowledge that you and I have. They don't have the knowledge that many of our listeners and readers have about Apple. But they also don't have that sort of faith in Apple's ability to continue to do interesting things. And that's why Apple's stock price is where it's at. It's why its price to earnings ratio is where it's at. It's a rational position for Wall Street to take. If Wall Street doesn't see big things happening.
And they don't have the insider knowledge that they used to, I think. Meaning, are they getting as much information that's really valuable from the supply chain?
And they also don't have people that are just flat out selling information like they used to. Those people went to jail. So where I'm going with this is that everything that Wall Street is doing to decide how to value Apple looking forward feels to me more and more like it's shooting in the dark. And I know that's not what's happening, but they don't have the resources that they used to
get information. Tim said he was going to double down on secrecy. And I think we largely dismissed that. And I think that we were wrong to largely dismiss that. And by we, I actually mean a lot of people, not just you and me.
Mm-hmm.
It appears that Apple has doubled down on secrecy, at least to some degree. But Wall Street's insight into Apple's workings did come from that guy who was selling secrets.
Yeah.
And he was stopped. And I would be surprised if we had that big a scandal again. That mid-level manager who was just, brazenly selling secrets to
that was just hedge fund crazy. Guys.
That was like what, 6 years ago?
Yeah, something. Excuse me. Yeah, that sounds about right.
But where Wall Street has had some kind of insight into Apple was buying or accessing secrets from the supply chain, and I think that Apple has successfully engineered things so that it becomes harder and harder and harder to understand what Apple's doing from the supply chain. But there's more to it than that, because the supply chain really mostly tells you information about what Apple is manufacturing. Now, we did once upon a time, we would get drips, especially coming from like DigiTimes.
Mm-hmm.
We would get drips coming out about Apple testing display sizes or ordering a certain part and then trying to figure out what Apple might be trying to do based on that. But I think that the things that Apple is working on right now, at least some of them, allow them to keep more of the secrets on the inside. Like, for instance, now that Project Titan is not really working on actual cars and is working on software, you'll notice that the rumors and leaks that have come out of Project Titan have plummeted.
Right.
It's a smaller team for one thing, and it's mostly software people for another. So you don't have a bunch of quote unquote non-Apple people involved with it. I will repeat something I've said before. I met people at a party that were working on Project Titan.
Mm-hmm.
And this was before, this was actually, before the story broke, and I was working on breaking the story when Business Insider beat me to it. And I was really annoyed by that. But anyway, that's not the point. Those opportunities are fewer and everyone's working under Bob Mansfield, someone that people tend to respect. And so you see fewer secrets coming out of that. And we've had relatively few leaks coming out of Apple's medical device experiments too. And so these seem to be areas where Apple, I think the biggest revelations we've had from Project Titan in the last few months were regulatory filings. Where Apple, jumped up its fleet to what, 21 vehicles or something like that? 27 right. vehicles? So, those are the information that Apple can't keep a lid on because it's public information. Right? So my whole point is I think Apple is working on more things that it is able to more successfully keep secret. And because of that, we have a relatively low PE. We have a PE that's closer to HP's by orders of magnitude than it is to Amazon.
Right.
So anyway, next 2 to 3 years, I think we're going to finally see some of that pipeline.
All right, and then all that stock that Apple has has been buying back, that's just gone from a practical standpoint, because it will never go back out into the market.
Well, it could. It can. Apple is still manufacturing new shares to give to employees and, you know, executives and board members. But they're buying back far more shares than they're handing out.
Oh, okay. All right. So,
this is what Apple does with this buyback. It's called retiring shares.
Mm-hmm.
So, like for instance, one of the pieces I read in the aftermath of Apple's earnings report was that you know they were looking at what kind of share price it would take for Apple to hit a $1 trillion valuation, and this was a Seeking Alpha piece. When they had calculated that, Apple had 5.1x billion shares outstanding. But then, like, now all of a sudden, Apple has 4.9 billion shares outstanding. That means that the price per share has to be even higher for Apple to hit $1 trillion. But at the same time, Apple retiring the shares is driving up the price. So, you know, it's kind of a wash.
Okay.
But Apple does still release some amount of new shares to employees in the form of employee stock option plans and, you know, grants to executives and things like that.
All right. So, holy crap. This is just a lot of money.
It's a lot of money. It's a lot of information. 2 to 3 years. I think we're going to see some of that pipeline. It might even be sooner. It might actually be more like that 15 to 18 months. Range, but that's the only reason why it makes sense for Apple to state that it's going to be aggressive, and to be so aggressive, and to turn on the fire hose of Benjamins, you know, aimed at its own stock. They're not doing that just to prop up the shares. They're doing it because they think the company is undervalued, and they think the company is undervalued because of what they know and what we know, versus what we know.
So, all right. So in the next couple of years, 3 years, maybe, we're looking at Phil Schiller being on stage and saying, "Can't innovate my ass again," right?
Yeah, sure worked out well the last time he said that.
Oh boy, howdy. Yeah.
I wonder if he regrets saying that. I mean, don't get me wrong. That was a really cool device.
It was.
But it was flawed as can be, and they haven't done anything with it since.
But so it was innovative. Despite all its flaws.
It was innovative, but they haven't done anything with it since. I wonder how he feels about that.
Well, the next time you're hanging out at the coffee shop and Phil walks in, ask him.
I'll do that. Yeah. Seems reasonable.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, by the way, I got an invitation to Google. I'm gonna, a friend of mine has left another company and has gone over to Google.
Mm-hmm.
And he wants me to come so he can give me a tour.
That'll be fun.
He thinks it'll be ironic and funny for the two of us to be sitting in Google, considering he has strong Apple leanings, or had strong Apple leanings.
Yeah, it'll be great. Everyone will sit around and laugh.
yeah, not really. I think it's actually more ironic when I get invited to Apple.
Actually, yeah.
Google, like, listen, it's the Silicon Valley Mac User Group, they mm-hmm. meet at Google. Right, Google gives this Mac user group a meeting room. Now, mind you, there's an employee of Google that sponsors
mm-hmm.
the mug, and he's super awesome. And he sits there while we yak about Apple stuff, and he's interested in Apple stuff too, of course.
Of course.
But I mean, my point is that, like, you know, there's no mug meeting in Cupertino. There's no mug meeting on Apple. The CapMac, Capital Macintosh Mac User Group.
Yep, in Austin.
In Austin. My mother is the president, Nancy. She used to write for us at TMO.
Mm-hmm.
I remember. I think you met her.
Yeah. Nancy and I, we've gone out partying together.
Long before she joined CapMac, CapMac met. The first CapMac meeting I ever went to in the 90s was on Apple's campus in Austin, because they have a campus. They have Apple Care and some other offices.
Uh-huh.
in Austin. It was great. You drive by and there would be the six colored logo. This is before Steve came back. And CatMac used to meet on Apple's campus. Now Apple kicked him off.
That's so lame.
It is lame. It is actually lame that Apple does that sort of thing. And so anyway, yeah, I mean, it's, I don't really find it all that ironic that I'll be dining at on Google's campus. Google is, as many problems as I have with Google, they're much more accommodating and open than Apple is. You know, it kind of reminds me of that day when Michael Dell said that his company was the first to bring Wi-Fi to a laptop, which was true as long as you pretend that Apple hadn't done it a year before that.
Right. I remember Phil jumping off the scaffolding with the iBook in his hands.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, when Michael Dell said that, this is one of my big early hits as a writer. Mm-hmm. When Michael Dell said that, I ended up having like four or five different phone calls with Dell's PR department. They called me back a couple of times.
Oh, wow.
As they were tracking down information, it's like, oh, really? Did he say that? It's like, yeah, he said that. what laptop is he talking about? And they eventually got me a clarified message that what he really meant was the first PC laptops, first Windows laptop. That's what he meant. God. It's not what he said.
It's not what he said, and it's not what he meant. But
it is not what he meant either. It was just Michael Dell being Michael Dell. Anyway, the point is that they were super awesome to me, Dell's PR department. They were super awesome to me. This is way back in the 90s, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And they were, and this was like such a, as nice as the individual people are in Apple's PR, and as awesome as those people are, it's sometimes hard to get answers out of them.
It's not as bad as it was.
It's true. It's getting better all the time.
Yeah. There was a time when the joke was, if you ask Apple's PR department for anything, it's like sending a message into a black hole.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, anyway, yeah, I'm going to go see Google. That was a digression.
Yeah, but it was a fun one.
Okay. So what do you think, by the way? What do you think of my analysis?
I like it. And I like the idea that in the next two or three years, Apple's going to blow us away with some amazing new innovation that right now we just can't even figure out what it is.
Yeah, we're hungry for that. We want to see Apple. Yeah, and of course, even if Apple does release a new product, it'll take about 6 months for people to be going, well, Apple clearly can't innovate anymore. Which is what happened like starting, it was almost immediately after the iPad release. We got, well, what's Apple done recently?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
That's right. We did.
Yeah. So, whatever Apple is about to do, the next two or three years, when it releases the new Mac Pro finally, if we get a fantabulous update to iMac Pro, or, oh my goodness, we get a new Mac Mini. Can you imagine?
I can't.
The haters will immediately kick back in with the, clearly Apple can't do anything else.
Right. Well, sometimes having the stability of knowing that's what's going to happen makes it a little easier to get through the day because, there you have that comfort of knowing you can expect it. You can rely on it, like the sun rising and setting.
And you know what we need? We need like some kind of poll site so that we can make bets, like for a penny or something like that. I'm not talking about, like large quantities of money, but like we need to be able to start a poll that says something like, how long will it take the first Apple death knell to be published after Apple announces its next major product?
Oh yeah. We could probably narrow it down to hours as opposed to days.
That's true. That's true. There will be someone who says that the release of this product is proof that Apple is doomed. That's true.
My guess is that leading up to the announcement, people will have written the articles, and all they have to do is find and replace to put the product name in.
Yeah, that also seems about right. Okay, all right. We've gone way, way over on this particular topic.
Yeah, but we had fun.
We did have fun, yeah. All right, so topic two is, wow, California, this is a headline that just crossed my Apple Watch. California took a major step today toward becoming the first state to require solar panels on nearly all new homes.
Oh, wow.
Wow. That's interesting. All right, so Facebook, this is the title, this is the note I have for topic two. Facebook, Mark, Sheryl, Center, WhatsApp, Tim, privacy.
Okay, I think that sums it up right there. Next topic.
yeah. So, let's see here. What predicated, as we were working on topics, and we started talking about something, and we realized that, okay, this is the angle to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
What predicated that was the WhatsApp guy.
Yes, Jan Koum. He's one of the co-founders of WhatsApp, and he left the company because he is leaving Facebook. There we go. He is leaving Facebook over concerns about the way Facebook handles and views privacy. Specifically, he doesn't like the idea that Facebook wants to reduce the encryption security that's in WhatsApp today, and Facebook wants to be able to mine the information that's in our conversations in WhatsApp, just as they do in their other services for marketing purposes.
And privacy is one of the things that WhatsApp offered, like, as a selling point.
Yeah, it's one of the key features.
Okay, so the first thing I have to say to this guy is, what did you expect, dude?
Well, when you get paid, what was it, $19 million for your company? It's
$19 billion.
Thank you. $19 billion for your company. That much money, it makes it hard to see the future.
This is true, but my response is, I'm shocked that it took this long for that to happen, because this is what Facebook does. Like, well, I mean, maybe
it didn't happen because he had been advocating to keep the privacy in place.
Or maybe they had an agreement. You know, a gentleman's agreement. It's like, no, we just, you know, we want this for other reasons. But of course, that was probably a lie, because Mark Zuckerberg is Mark Zuckerberg.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the other WhatsApp co-founder, he left Facebook last year. And he's been very open and public about, or with his criticism about Facebook and their privacy policies.
Yeah, because Facebook's privacy policies stink. Now, here is an interesting. All right, you know that one of my theses.
Let's go with thesi.
I like that thesi. One of my thesi. just that's beautiful. That's awfulness.
I thought you'd like that.
Yeah, for sure. I like that. One of my thesis has been that Mark Zuckerberg was too young for the power he amassed. And there was a great quote. Let's see if I can find that quote. So this is from Robert McNamee, not Robert McNamara, the warmonger.
Right.
He said, gotta find it. La 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 la.
Making the sausage, making it fresh.
There we go.
Grinding it up for you.
Facebook is, quote, almost the same size. This guy, by the way, this is, he's a VC. He was one of Mark Zuckerberg's early mentors. He's also the co-founder of the Center for Humane Technology Privacy Advocation Group.
Mm-hmm.
That, frankly, is was put together in part because of Facebook and Google. So anyway, he says, Facebook is, quote, almost the same size as Christianity. When you are presiding over the largest interconnected organization in the world, that gets to your head after a while, unquote.
That's a pretty amazing quote.
It's a very astute observation, and I think it's one that plays directly to this thesis of mine. That Mark Zuckerberg and Cheryl, what's Cheryl's last name?
Crow.
No.
Streep.
No.
You know, Meryl's sister.
You're not helping.
Should I sing the sausage jingle I just made up?
Maybe. Sheryl Sandberg. They're the two big executives, the two biggest executives at Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And that Mark in particular was too young for the amount of power he amassed. That the difference between him and early young tech bigwig, not just billionaires, but just tech wunderkin. It's like the difference between him and okay. him and Steve Jobs and there's a million differences between Mark Zuckerberg and Steve Wozniak. But the difference between Steve Jobs and Mark Zuckerberg is that Steve Jobs, as influential and important as he was within the computer world, and as influential as Apple became, they did not have reach, access, or control of information and lives the way Facebook does. Steve Jobs might have made some of the same mistakes that Mark Zuckerberg did if he was the guy who came up with Facebook. Maybe. I don't think he would have, but he might have.
He would have come up with other mistakes.
He would have come up with, yeah, you're right. It probably would have been other mistakes. And, Steve, as a matter of fact, Steve, goodness gracious. Do you remember that old piece I posted as the cool stuff found, that Nightline interview with Ted Koppel?
Yeah.
About like two months ago
from young Steve.
Yeah. It was like 1980, two or three. And it was the writer who was saying that, computers have this dark power, and they're a huge danger to us because we're putting all this information into these databases that can be used by, governments and or companies. Mm-hmm. Right. And Steve was saying, no, the best way to fight that is to put computers in the hands of everybody. So Steve did have an idealism about empowering people from the get-go. And Mark Zuckerberg has never expressed that kind of idealism. The idealism that Mark Zuckerberg has expressed has always been about the power of connecting people.
Mm-hmm.
And what he has said recently is the only way to connect people is to make it free, because only rich people, he has essentially, in my opinion, said only rich people can afford privacy. Everybody else is going to have to suck it up. And if they want to be connected, they're going to have to accept what it is that we're doing with their stuff. And again, this is that lack of wisdom to understand the ramifications of what he's doing.
I think this lack of wisdom and his youthful looks have been playing into the pass that a lot of people have been giving him with the way Facebook has played fast and loose with their privacy. Because I think people still look at him and think of him as a boy, which he's not. He's a man in his 30s. He has a family. He has a child.
And billions of dollars.
And billions of dollars.
Tens of billions of dollars.
Yeah. I mean, he's got plenty of money in his back pocket.
and he doesn't have the life experience to make decisions that are appropriate and reasoned when it comes to privacy. And yeah, I'm totally buying into he amassed this power way too fast for him to be able to deal with appropriately. And I think he really doesn't have a sense of just how bad some of these things are.
Net value of $70 billion net worth.
Gee, man, so,
yeah, tens of billions. So, everything you just said, I totally agree with. And another thing that Mr. McNamee has said is that he said that he's very disappointed in Sheryl Sandberg and Mark Zuckerberg. And he thinks that, let me get that quote too. That he believes that Facebook believes that it's quote unquote going to get away with it. Referring to the Cambridge Analytica scandal, referring to trafficking on our data, referring to its entire business model. That you know, there was all this pushback. There was all this nonsense about people dumping Facebook, and no one actually did. Like, Facebook use went up in the weeks after the big campaign to delete Facebook. And you know, there were hearings in front of Congress. Mr. McNamee believes that Mark Zuckerberg believes that they're good to go now, and that pretty much everything's are all systems go.
So we got through the theater of having these congressional hearings, and now it's just back to business as usual.
That's what he believes, and I believe he's probably right. And the Facebook thing, I mean, to wit, wanting to ruin one of the fantastic aspects of WhatsApp to add to the problem.
Man. You know, I wish we had a better option for an incredibly powerful social network, but I just don't see it happening.
Well,
it needs to be something completely different.
Mark Zuckerberg is right that only the rich can afford privacy. He's wrong to think that that's okay.
Oh, I like that. That's a great way to describe it.
Because, I mean, and don't get me wrong, there are plenty of people who could afford to pay for a privacy-centric social network of some sort. But the vast majority of people want free and don't care. They don't care what it's costing them. They don't mind being the product. They don't care about being the product. But the vast majority of them are even ignorant of the concept, right? You know, those of us in the echo chamber who talk about this stuff, we know all about it, right? We talk all about it, but we don't, you know, no one else knows. They don't care. And Mark Zuckerberg is right about, if you want to be able to spread this to the far corners of the world, it's got to be free. And the only way to pay for free is by making people the product and selling targeted ads. He's right about that.
I wish he wasn't.
And I would furthermore add that I do think, it is possible for a privacy-centric social network to exist, but it would not be able to grow as fast as Facebook did. And it wouldn't make its owners billionaires anywhere near as fast as something like Facebook or WhatsApp or Instagram or, you know, any of the other services that have been a part of this surveillance capitalism business model.
I'm not feeling good about social networks today.
No, I'm not either. Make sure you join us and talk about this over at facebook.com/group/contextmachine, which
which ironically is actually a really good tool. I really like our Facebook page.
I do too. This is the thing I like most about Facebook groups, or the thing I like most about Facebook. I am in a science fiction writers too. It's a great group. It's not just TMO's groups that I promote. I've had gaming groups for MMOs, mm-hmm. with the social component. I've had groups on Facebook for those kinds of loose affiliations of people, and I love Facebook groups. It's the thing I like most about Facebook.
I'm in some Facebook groups too.
I would 99.9% of my Facebook time is spent on the Apple Context Machine Facebook group, TMO's Facebook page, mm-hmm. and there you have it. And then some science fiction writers group too.
See, those pages are great. Man, it's this bittersweet relationship. It's dysfunctional.
Would you pay? Would you pay for a group? Right. I mean, don't get me wrong. You could launch a site that was dedicated to, you know, people paying, you know, $4 a month to be part of a group with other people. You could try that. But, you know, a big part of why Facebook groups work is because everybody's on Facebook already. Mm-hmm. 2 billion people. Because we're all there already, because the feeds are all tied in together, right? That's why Facebook groups work. But my question is, would you pay, like, how much would you pay? I would actually become a Facebook fan if I could, pay that $10 a month.
And in exchange,
maybe even $20 a month.
So in exchange for that, you get to participate in your pages, and you're not being tracked.
And my feed, yeah, and all of my information is sequestered and protected vigorously.
Okay, if I could pay for that, sure, I would absolutely pay. I mean, Facebook is such a big platform that not being on it would be a problem. So, yeah, I would pay a monthly.
And for
fee.
Them to proactively not track, like you know, if they track something through a third party site, you know, through their various third party tracking things, mm-hmm. they would. Specifically and deliberately destroy that information.
Yeah, I would pay for that.
And also not make me part of psychological experiments. Thank you very much.
Yeah. And I think where we see the value in that and would be willing to pay 10, 15, whatever a month to subscribe to Facebook in that way, I think the average user, and we can blame Apple for part of this, driving prices through the App Store down through the floor. I don't think the average Facebook user would see the value. So I don't think Facebook could charge more than $9.99 a month. And it's probably much less than that is what they'd have to pay to get people to do it.
Well, I think you could look at it a different way. I think that there is a subset of people that would pay $20 a month, maybe even more, and everybody else would take the free, and that there's a sweet spot there. Right? Yes. Facebook doesn't need or want everybody to head down that path.
Yeah. Okay. I like
just
that.
Giving those of us willing to pay the option to stay part of the platform. Because there is still value in us being there, even if they're not selling our data to other people.
Yeah,
selling access to us. To
other people. I was thinking about it as it's a subscription only service, but yeah, do it just as it is today, and then add in a $20 a month subscription that takes you out of all the tracking.
Yeah, it's like the $100 a year service. What is it? YouTube Red. Mm-hmm. That lets you not see commercials on YouTube. Now, Google and YouTube are still cataloging every little thing you do.
They're just not showing you the ads anymore.
They're just not showing ads to you.
Right.
You know, they're still going to be, but they're still going to be selling access to you to other advertisers elsewhere on the Google platform based on your YouTube traffic. But it's so kind of like that.
Kind of. So wait, you're saying I'd pay $20 a month for the privilege of not knowing that Google's tracking or Facebook is tracking me anymore?
No. I want more than that. I definitely want. And here's the thing, it is the value of groups that would make me the most likely to pay for that, as opposed to getting sucked into a never ending stream of my idiot relatives and idiot friends who, you know, spew idiotic memes that have no basis in fact.
Yeah, good.
I'm not times. Saying all my not all my not all
not,
my
not all your idiots. Idiot friends do that.
No, not all my friends are idiots, and not all of my family are idiots by any stretch of the imagination. But you know what I'm talking about. Everybody knows what I'm talking about.
We all know. We all have friends and family on Facebook where we see the post come up, and it's like, oh,
yes.
And then you're doing the thing, hide posts like this.
Yes, exactly. So yeah, I would pay for that, and not even close. All right, I know that we're out of time, but we made the mistake of teasing what we were going to talk about.
We totally did. We could pretend we didn't.
We could, or we could do the really short version.
All right, let's do the really short version.
Yeah, I think we should. Maybe we can go into more depth tomorrow on TDO. Or did y'all talk about it today on TDO?
No, but the funny thing is I was planning on having some sort of discussion about this on TDO tomorrow.
Yeah, so, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, so let's do the sort of prep. And then we can promote this show on tomorrow's TDO.
Yes, we can. We have the symbiotic relationship thing going on.
But let's not tell anybody that we're going to do that.
Oh, great. It's going to be a surprise.
It's going to be a surprise. Yeah. Yeah. That way. Yeah. Keeps the mystery.
I love that. All right. Let me flip the button. So we're recording again.
Okay. Right. Excellent.
Right. Hold on. There we go.
Nice.
Yeah. Foley master.
All right. Get to it. Tell us what the deal is.
All right. So what got us heading down this path is Google Duplex. And Google Duplex is a thing that Google announced at their Google I/O conference, which is this week. And what it does is it uses artificial intelligence to handle like phone interactions for you.
It's a freaking software agent, finally.
Yeah, yeah. It's like your personal appointment making software agent thing. And so the examples that they gave when they're showing this off, they had the software agent, the artificial intelligence, make a call and make a dinner reservation. And the voice inflections, I didn't realize that it was an artificial intelligence, a robot, whatever you want to call it.
The first one I listened to?
Uh-huh.
I thought it was the recipient that was the robot.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's how good it was.
I thought that was going to be the, you know, quote unquote surprise twist.
Yeah, and it did the things that, or it included the speech mannerisms that people do without thinking and you hear without realizing and your brain just filters it out. But if those things aren't there, it suddenly sounds unnatural. So the little pauses, the occasional upspeak, the ums and ahs and the casual mm-hmm sort of response things, that was all happening with this Google Assistant thing, the Google Duplex.
But the biggest thing was that it was adaptable.
Right.
And the AI was able to make decisions on your behalf. That was able to react and adapt to the person, to the human being that they were talking to, that they were trying to schedule something with.
Right. Yeah. So in the situation where they said, can we get an appointment at 2:30? or whatever time it was that they wanted. And the real person came back and said, no, but what sort of is for haircuts or something? What does your client actually need? And the agent came back and said, just a haircut. And so then the real person responded with, oh, well, we have an opening at 10 o'clock and another one at 11:15. Will either of those work? And it said, let's do 10 o'clock. And the whole, you know, so it did the whole thing. It handled all of the variations and permutations that came up during the conversation. And when it finished, there was no reason to believe that it wasn't too humans on the conversation.
Okay, right. And all that's fantastic and it's amazing. Now, can I poop on this, please?
Totally.
You weren't expecting me to poop on it, were you?
I'd
given you no indication whatsoever I was going to poop on it.
No, but I know you, and can I tell you why I think you're going to poop on it?
Sure.
Because you're finding it really creepy that there's this system that's acting as if it's a human and not telling you that it isn't. And then at what point does this start acting on people's behalf as if they were the real person? And now you don't even know.
Not even close. Not even close. So hold on a second.
Okay.
Let me take down my pants.
Oh,
I got to poop on this. That was actually my man part. Just FYI.
I can't believe that I didn't close the blinds in the studio today.
Oh. All right, here's why I'm pooping on this. The whole thing is nonsense. It was recordings. They weren't live demos. Who knows? Even if that was an unwitting participant on the other end, who knows how many takes it took? Okay, and I don't believe it was an unwitting participant whatsoever. I think it was someone who was probably trained to work, and there was probably even a certain amount of scriptage going on.
I think that you're being a little too generous in the what you think happened. I believe that the entire thing was scripted, and so the AI knew how to answer because it knew what the questions were going to be.
Yeah, well, or because more specifically,
this was a demonstration of what they're working on.
More specifically, it was the AI being told things that they knew how the AI would respond to, as opposed to the AI knowing what's coming. Because that's actually not likely. But what is likely is that the AI was asked specific questions that the developers knew the machine learning could handle.
Yeah, I think this was a proof of concept.
It was a proof of concept, but everybody's treating it as if it's the second coming of Jesus.
Well, on one hand, it's like crazy amazing, because if Google does have the technology where with a little more work, they can make something like this totally doable. I mean, that's incredible. That's a huge leap forward in how we interact with artificial intelligences. The other side of it, though, is, you know, I'm sitting here saying, oh my God, this is amazing. Well, when the United States started testing nuclear bombs, that was amazing and that was awesome, but not in the good sense. So I don't know if this is going to be a good thing, but I feel comfortable saying, what they're doing, the technology itself is pretty awesome.
Well, I'm not worried about the creepy factor. This is where we want to go with our digital assistants. Of course, it would actually eventually be digital assistant talking to digital assistant.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really where we're going. And, you know, now you don't even need the human being on the phone, even at the salon. And, you know, you don't need to muck about wasting your own time having to do something as pedestrian as gasp, make your own appointment. And that's great. I'm all for that kind of stuff. Google's nowhere near as close as it made out that it was. And this demo is super impressive, but also nowhere near as impressive as everybody is making it out. But there's one more thing, because now I got to poop on Apple.
Okay.
Apple is getting its butt kicked in this stuff. And I want Apple to not get its butt kicked. I want Apple to make Siri the best. And right now, Siri is not the best.
Well, I think part of Apple's problem is that we have companies like Google that are showing off these technology ideas, these concepts they're working on, and presenting them in very compelling ways. I mean, the whole interaction between the human and the AI, that was very compelling. And and people associate that with what Google is doing, and they don't see Apple showing off the same sort of things. And now they're like, well, what about Siri? Sure seems like it's lagging.
Nope. Not giving Apple an easy way out there.
Oh, I'm not giving Apple an easy way
because,
out. I'm just saying this,
Amazon
this is a problem
stuff,
for Apple.
Amazon has stuff shipping today that is practically more useful than HomeKit and Siri.
There are currently, I believe, over 40,000 skills available for
Ladybug. 40,000 dumb parrot routines that are becoming indistinguishable from actual AI.
Yes, yes.
That's the practical effect is that they are, it's like any technology sufficiently advanced is indistinguishable from magic. That's what Arthur C. Clarke told us.
Yes.
Right.
Did you see the video that I posted a few days ago where I demoed how the A-Lady can now remember things for me?
Yes.
So now I can say, Alexa, where do I keep the dongles? And the A-Lady will come back and tell me they're in the hall closet.
Right.
Actually, I would have to say, where are the MacBook dongles? And then she'll tell me they're in the hall closet. And it's amazing.
Yeah, because you told her that.
Because I told her that.
Not because she knows.
Right. And really, until Amazon releases the little robot that can follow me around.
Yeah.
I'll have to tell the A-Lady where I keep my dongles. But still, it's really impressive. And it's really cool, and it makes the A-Lady seem more intelligent than it is when all it's doing is keeping track of something that I told it and parroting
it
back to me.
It's dumb parroting. But the more of that dumb parroting that is out there, the more indistinguishable it is from actual artificial intelligence.
Yes, and in this case, that dumb parroting turns out to be really useful for me.
And Google is doing dumb parroting with real artificial intelligence. And both of these companies are kicking Apple's butt. This demonstration might be 2 or 3 years off from anything that's in a shipping product. I have no idea. Maybe 5 years off, maybe 6 months. I don't know. It's probably two or three years.
It's not coming this year. I would be stunned if they could.
I don't think it's coming next year either. I think this is 2 or 3 years out at best. There's just, yeah. Anyway, I am not all that impressed with the demo, except in principle.
Yeah, that's what impresses me. I mean, the idea that they're principle. Working on this. Yeah, it's
you know how when you see a behind the scenes making of, especially with a Western, and it's out in the desert, and you know, and you're looking at the finished shot, and you see the town, but then they'll have a camera. That's craning around, and you see all the two-by-fours holding up the facades.
Yep.
If we could have looked behind the scenes, we would have seen digital two-by-fours propping up that demonstration.
I have no doubt. But the fact that they're working on this, that's really impressive.
Yeah, and Apple may actually be working on this kind of stuff. Remember, Apple's whole deal is to make Siri actually understand you.
Yes. And that's really hard to do.
And it is super hard to do. And it's a big part of why Apple is so far behind on this stuff. But I don't know. I want Apple to not be getting its butt kicked. By the way, this is supposed to be a very short prelude discussion until tomorrow.
Yeah.
We kind of went full Jeff and Brian.
Of course we did. Did you expect anything else? That's so sweet.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. All right, well, let's cut us off now. We'll take it up. Are you planning on having?
So my plan tomorrow, because Kelly and John were both really excited about these topics, They really want to talk about it. So tomorrow we're going to have a special edition where we have a bigger panel because you're going to be there too.
Well, okay, if you want. I've said a lot of what I want to say today.
Yeah, well.
So if you want to do them, that's fine. But I certainly am interested to hear what John has to say about all this.
Well, and you're going to get to hear it in real time because you're going to be on the show tomorrow too.
All right, fair enough. But with that, we are so over. We apologize for going over. Quite frankly, I enjoyed today's conversation. I listeners did too.
I had a lot of fun today, but I always do. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, shoot us a message at acm@macobserver.com or at that fancy, fancy Facebook page that I bet Brian's going to tell you about.
Yeah, I don't always enjoy a conversation. Wait, that's not, no. Did I say that out loud? Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Bandwidth is provided by Cashfly. The bass is by Boom, recorded just for TMO. And that's all for this week. And do head over to facebook.com/groups/contextmachine and join us in the conversation over there.
And stay subscribed, even though when I'm trying so hard to make Brian feel good about himself on the show and give him validation, and then he turns around and just craps all over it like that, go ahead and stay subscribed.
You can send me the therapy bill. We'll see you online at the Mac Observer. Kidding. Of course I enjoy our conversations.
I love you, man.
Yeah.